But now we must take the next step forward and guarantee every man, woman, and child in our country basic economic rights, the right to quality health care. The right to as much education as one needs to succeed in our society. The right to a good job that pays a living wage. The right to affordable housing. The right to a secure retirement. And the right to live in a clean environment. We must recognize that in the 21st century, in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, economic rights are human rights. And that is what I mean by democratic socialism.
Friday, June 14th, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Cute podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, who is having some tree work done outside his apartment today, Sean Kitchen. Fuck the trees. The good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. In today's show, Bernie Sanders gives a major speech defending democratic socialism and introducing a 21st century economic bill of rights. Man, Bernie just keeps on widening the space of possibility in American politics. It gives my head like spins in a good way. Well, participants in the first round of the Democratic Party presidential debates are set. All but four people made the cut. The four candidates who won't be joining the party will be Montana Governor Steve Bullock, who? Massachusetts Representative Seth Moulton, former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel, and Miramar, Florida Mayor Wayne Messam, who really doesn't even have a place I can get bumper stickers. It's true. Biden wags his finger at a woman and mansplains how pro-woman he is. That goes over really well on social media. Cadre, a real estate company partially owned by Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, has received more than $90 million in dark money from foreign investors. That's since he's been in the White House. The money was funneled through secret accounts in the Cayman Islands. Jared may not have too much to worry about, though, since Elaine Chao has stepped into the corruption spotlight this week in unprecedented ways. Like, I couldn't even keep up with it. Can you say China? Nancy Pelosi further stymies moves to opening impeachment hearings at the Peterson Foundation's 2017 fiscal summit. Peterson Foundation, by the way, has long been criticized for its role in making the case for gutting social programs and advancing unbridled free trade. And Nancy's like, even says, like, hey, why are we talking about this? Let's talk about the debt. For real. Ahead of this week's hearing on Medicare for All, yes, there was a hearing for Medicare for All this week. The House Ways and Means, that was before the House Ways and Means Committee, the committee chair, Democrat Richard Neal of Massachusetts, gathered his fellow Democrats behind closed doors and told them not to use the phrase Medicare for All during the hearing. Instead, Neal told them to use universal health care or universal health coverage instead. He was not very successful. Multiple Democrats saying Medicare for All. Neal was actually known to be resistant to Medicare for All, and some of his largest financial backers are insurance companies and big pharma. What do we say to that?
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
The hearings did show, however, that Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania, that's right, Republican representative from PA's 16th district, is an anti-Medicare for All crusader. Carbon emissions from global energy industry increased at the fastest rate since 2011. We're all gonna die. That's according to BP's annual global energy report. According to the report, emissions increased by 2% because of the demand for energy significantly outstripped the rollout of renewable energy resources and infrastructure. BP's chief economist, Spencer Dale, told The Guardian, quote, "At a time when society is increasingly concerned about climate change and the need for action, energy demand and emissions are growing at their fastest rate for years." Yes, that was BP's chief economist. Hey, look, the Green New Deal is a disruptive initiative whose time has come. Time for people over jobs. Yeah, I said that. Maybe I'll tell you a little bit of what I mean by that ahead of an article that I'm working on. In this week's report from Gilead, due to Alabama lawmakers' recent passage of an extreme anti-abortion bill, right, rapists may be able to get custody of a child resulting from rapes they committed. Yes, that's because last month, these same lawmakers removed language from a bill that would have denied rapists parental rights. I swear to God, it's fucking crazy. Code Pink is seeking a permit to fly the baby Trump blimp on the National Mall during Trump's 4th of July address from the Lincoln Memorial. There's so many things wrong with that sentence, I don't even know where to begin, but whatever. New Monmouth University poll shows Warren moving into the number 2 spot in the 19% ahead of Bernie's 13% in Nevada. Biden still holding on to the top spot at 36% among likely caucus-goers, however. Latest head-to-head national polls showing 6 Democratic presidential candidates beating Trump in hypothetical matchup. Biden plus 13, Sanders plus 9, Harris plus 8, Warren plus 7. But we all know national polls mean nothing, but we're still going to talk about them. And the symbolic tree of friendship planted at the White House by Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron has died. Today's PA Focus, Governor Wolf says he'll veto a bill designed to increase the EITC tax credit. You know, that one that Sean's been talking about each week. That's a program to divert some money away from public schools towards private, for-profit, and religious schools. Will there be a raise in the minimum wage and a tip minimum wage? Not so fast. House Republicans told Patty Kim that, well, they haven't had the time to come up with a proposal to raise the wage from $7.25 an hour to anything above that, let alone 15. PA House Dems looking to do an end around Daryl Metcalf.
Daryl Metcalf.
To get Wolf's Restore Pennsylvania Infrastructure Plan out of committee and to the House floor for a full vote. Yeah, we'll see about that. PA Republicans refuse to support funding for updating all of PA's voting machines before the 2020 election. Governor Wolf has pushed for a $15 million plan to update all voting machines, which would include a paper backup. You know, not like the Russians have been found to be tampering with our elections already for 2020 or anything like that. No worries. A year-old black bear made its way into Midtown Harrisburg and freaked Sean out. The bear quickly became a learning opportunity for all the neighbors when local game warden allowed everyone to see the bear up close when it was sedated. No one lost their lives. Don't worry. And Eric Blank, author of Red State Revolt, The Teacher Strike Wave and Working Class Politics, he was just in Harrisburg and will be on his way to Bethlehem for Monday for a talk about his book and discuss working class politics. The event is sponsored by the DSA of the Lehigh Valley and will take place from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Color Me Mine at 25 East 3rd Street in Bethlehem. You can click show notes for more details. And it looks like we may be lining up an interview with Eric Blank, too, as well. We'll be talking to him on Monday. In today's last call, Trump dumps on NASA's moon plans. He tweeted, "For all the money we're spending, NASA should not be talking about going to the moon. We did that 50 years ago. They should be focused on the much bigger things we are doing, including Mars, of which the moon is a part," which confused everybody, "and then defense and science." This is despite the fact that Mike Pence had gone to NASA and urged them to up their timeline, increase it, get to the moon quickly because the president wants to. Well, it just got me wondering if it had anything to do with reports of, you know, one, Chinese space initiatives are going like crazy, and Trump had met with Chinese President Xi ahead of the current trade war. I wonder if they're going to be kind of collaborating on anything, especially given Elaine Chao's back channel to lots and lots of money for infrastructure initiatives. That's all speculation on my part, but watch this. NASA Administrator, by the way, Jim Bridenstine, says, "Nope, nothing has changed. Still going to moon 2024. NASA spots Starfleet logo embedded in a Martian dune. Sci-fi my ass. Sean got his car inspected, speaking of sci-fi, for reals. And if you're looking for a good beer for Father's Day this Sunday and you're in the Kutztown area, I don't know how you can resist picking up a couple 4-packs of Dad Jokes from Saucony Creek. Dad Jokes is a brute style IPA, and looks like it's supposed to be pretty good. And if, you know, while you're there and you say, hey, this looks like a cool place, I love their new patio, it looks great, ask them about their annual July 4th pig roast. That'll be taking place from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on July 4th. Tickets are $25, which includes slow-roasted pork, choice of great sides, including mac and cheese, coleslaw, corn on the cob, baked beans, roasted potatoes, watermelon salad, and so much more! Live music from Nick Cerniglia from 4 to 7 p.m. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in through the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you download the Rick Smith Show daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And I want to give a little shout out here before I'm going to move on to the end here to, maybe I'll wait till later on the show. I'll do it later. Shout out to Meg. I'll just say Meg, right? Because I don't want to out her too much. Congratulations to Meg on her working with PA Student Power this summer as part of an internship. Meg's a student of mine. She's doing some cool work. Got to meet our good friend, James Herzonski, just a couple days ago. So good luck to Meg and the rest of the Student Power Group. Well, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, hey, no problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button on the right sidebar. But the best way to help invest in keeping the media in the movement and the movement in the media, to become a member for as little as $5 a month, go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, how's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Man, it's going pretty good. Did you get any additional flooding or other wild animal warnings out there in Harrisburg?
No, but the bear was pretty cool, seeing the bear this weekend.
The bear.
It's a shame like it wasn't like in front of the deck, but I had to actually like go hunting for it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you know what? Steven, our very own intern, our Raging Chicken Press intern, was out there looking for you out there in Harrisburg and found the deck. I told him to look for the deck. So I said it'd be a great opportunity to do a little, like a profile piece on the deck. But you were nowhere to be found. Steven, he tried to find you, but...
I think I might have saw him inside the Capitol Rotunda, but I was hanging out with people and we were about to go to an action. I'm not sure if it was him or not.
Yeah, I know. You didn't want to spoil your reputation of being like your big shot. You don't have to talk to anybody that, you know, you didn't need to. You know, insider-outsider thing. I get it.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah, nothing like the welcoming voice and face of Sean Kitchen.
Which is not totally not me.
But
I am the least welcoming and sociable person at times.
Yeah, well, it's good to know. I'm glad that I asked him to look for you so he could feel disappointed and wonder what the hell, you know. Oh, man, I thought this guy was going to help me out, but I guess not. So...
But just don't get your hopes up around me.
Yeah, definitely don't get your hopes up around Sean. Maybe.
I've become too cynical for being out in Harrisburg. You know,
too cynical to talk to somebody who's kind of out there kind of covering event for Raging Chicken to even kind of talk to them and let them know that you exist and say, hey, yeah, I know that's a tough get. But whatever. But so this week, man, crazy stuff this week. I went through, you know, you heard in the intro, tons of stuff. And I tell you, that doesn't even scratch the surface on things going on, both at the national, at the state level. Things are really ramping up, both as we're kind of approaching. We're 2 weeks out now from the first Democratic presidential debate, which, as you kind of, you know, see, you can kind of check out who the candidates are, because I'm sure that there's you just say, okay, 4 people didn't make it, which means there's 20 other candidates, right? I mean, there were 24. You can go check it out. If you want to click on the show notes, you can see who made
it. I'm like pretty upset that Mike Gravel didn't make it.
Are you now? Why?
I mean, I think he has the best Twitter on all the. Have you seen his story about him or no?
I have not.
His Twitter account is one of the most unapologetic campaign accounts out there. has a bunch of he's literally lets a bunch of high school students run it, and they just spend the time dunking on people left and right.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, it's just it's literally a dunk show, pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's just like calling out Buttigieg and like others for their support of like American Empire and stuff like that, and him just going off like, yeah, he's there. His comms team is just is pretty good, if like for what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to run a losing campaign, it's definitely like the comms style to run. Scorch Earth.
There you go, Scorch Earth. Well, you know, that's what some of them are there for. You know, I mean, they're just, I mean, you know, I mean, get, I don't know, whatever, whatever. We'll see when we get to the debates. I've been looking forward to the debates. I've been looking forward to the debates a lot. I've been kind of like holding back on kind of like following anybody kind of too quickly or too much at this point. I really think it's going to depend a lot on how everybody is interacting, and to see who's going to emerge as the top candidates. But I have to say, Bernie Sanders, man, he gave this freaking speech on Wednesday, I guess. And it was a speech about democratic socialism and what it is. And he went through the history of, you know, not in like, you know, like long lecture of the history, but talked about basically every time that people have organized and made demands upon the U.S. government, right, for something, where it be Medicare, whether it be Social Security, whether it be non-child labor, getting rid of child labor, the elite, the oligarchs, as he calls them, the oligarchs have always claimed and used the banner of socialism, that is socialism and that we need to defeat it. And he runs through this as in a pattern. And he actually quotes FDR when he talks about when FDR gave his speech, and he says that all these people, when you start to do programs like this, I'm paraphrasing, programs that are kind of like are for the people and do this, you're going to get people from the banks, you're going to get people from capital, you're going to get people from the military industrial complex who are going to come out and hate you, right? And he said, they all hate me and I welcome their hatred, right? And Bernie could just kind of embrace that as his mantle and really put forward what he called as the unfinished aspects of the New Deal. Because FDR, of course, was proposing a second New Deal, right, which had to do with economic Bill of Rights, but, you know, was proposed shortly before his death. And Bernie Sanders basically said it's time to take up that mantle again, to bring forth on kind of economic rights. I have to say, if I were to add the one thing I wish he had added to that list, right? And I know this is, they'll stick in some people's craw to hear this, but I do think he said the right to kind of the right of sovereignty over your own body. I think that should have been in there too as well. But that'd be the only thing that was missing from that. I mean, I think the fact that instead of walking away and trying to kind of be put back into a corner on democratic socialism, Bernie Sanders basically just came out and said, this is what democratic socialism is. This is what I mean by it. And this is what I'm going to advocate for. Right. Like so often in this country, we are used to politicians who had like really progressive or left politics at some point in their previous lives to get to this point and said, yeah, I was young, you know, I was looking for all sorts of ways to go wishy-washy around it. Instead, Bernie Sanders remaining 100% kind of consistent with his 40-year-long campaign to bring the issues to the forefront that he's been advocating for. I mean, if you look at what is happening in this campaign already, the fact that Medicare for All is front and center, Green New Deal front and center, right? The fact a living wage front and center, right? Union rights front and center, right? I mean, so many of these things that he has been advocating for so long have defined the you know, part of the political possibility and limitations on this campaign. So, I mean, it was incredible. So I would encourage people, you heard a little snip of that in today's intro, I'd encourage people to watch his whole speech and check it out. I've got it kind of linked there and there. So Sean, so you just go to the link in the show notes and you can watch it too. it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah, I did not catch anything national this week. Pretty much, I did not catch the Bernie Sanders thing. Was not paying attention.
Well, national news is banned from the deck, right?
Yes, it's good. Like when you have the horse blinders on and you don't have to see like the world around you, you know, see the stuff like happening straight in front of you in the state, then just seeing everything just fall apart. You know, it's comforting.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you built yourself a nice little cushion there. That's good. Nice little safe space.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, you know, another kind of campaign news. Let me say this too as well. We had some new polling that came out, right? And basically showing, you know, Trump apparently just absolutely freaked out about this, that basically everyone's going to beat him. Like at this point in some national polling, the fact that you have
Clinton in a landslide.
Clinton in a landslide. Yeah, right. But you still have Biden still kind of leading the pack, right? Saying he can beat beat Trump by 13 points. But that's, you know, you see these numbers start to slide and you see some of the other numbers starting to come up because like in the national polls, you got, yeah, Biden's at plus 13, but Sanders is at plus 9 and Harris is at plus 8 and Warren is at plus 7. Right. And that's it. You know, again, national polls don't mean squat because that's not how you elect presidents. Right. As we know. But it gives you a sense of what I think about this is like how familiar are people with the candidates? Right. How familiar are they with their policies and how much are they paying attention to politics? And that's what that tells me. The fact that Buttigieg and Booker are down at like we're within basically the margin error of that poll tells you something. Right. But, you know, it does show you that it does. You know, the interesting thing happening like in Nevada, of course, one of the early states Bernie Sanders is kind of losing his second place in the polling and Elizabeth Warren kind of coming up to number two behind Biden. Biden is still polling really high at that point. But again, we've got the debates coming up and he keeps on wagging his finger at people. That's going to be something else. But it's something to watch in Nevada and some of the early states to see, like, again, what is gaining traction and so on. And I can't help but think that, you know, part of what we're seeing now, especially with Bernie Sanders coming out with that speech on democratic socialism, is that we're seeing candidates begin to really define what their campaign is about and the lane that they're running in. So we've got Elizabeth Warren is like really defining. She is the policy person. She's the I got a plan person. Bernie Sanders is the movement kind of social democratic or democratic socialist person. Right. You got Biden is the guy who's like, look at my smile and vote for me because you know who I am.
I like ice cream.
Yeah. And I was friends with Obama. Right. That's the Biden model. And you've got people like, you know, like Kamala Harris, who came out really, really strong. I think right now is kind of is like in this space of trying to figure out where she's running and so on. So, you know, so we'll see that. And we'll, you know, see the rest of them, too, as well. I mean, Booker, I think, is, you know, he still wants everyone to get along. And Buttigieg is he's gaining some traction, but he's we'll see what kind of chops he's got when it comes to the debate. So I think a lot is going to depend on what we're going to see in these debates. And we'll see what's going to happen with the polling at that point. But so, man, so what's that?
I said, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So what do you think about Biden's little event this week?
What event? He was out in
the
public?
Finger wag. Well, yeah, he was out in public. And every time he's out in public, he does something like this.
I mean, he has the nickname Gaff Biden for a reason. I don't know. I mean, it just shows you who he is. It is what he is. I mean, is there anything else to put it? Like,
well, say I didn't see what they're talking about. What are you talking about here? What happened in the finger wag?
So a young woman approached Biden and questioned Biden over his support of the Hyde Amendment. And Biden went, you know, full blown Donald Trump, said, I'm the only person, I'm the best for women's advocacy and all. And was pointing his finger in the woman's face as this was going on. And the picture went online and, you know, kind of like, you know, first Biden was blowing the woman off and then, you know, also putting his finger in her face on like how she how he's like, you know, the best candidate out there for women. Very Scott Wagner like, if you ask me.
Yeah, I'll say. And I think I love the fact the woman who is gonna having like Biden's finger in her face, she was awesome. Like, yeah. She sat there with a big smile on her face. Like, I couldn't, when I was watching her, all I could think of like was going through her head is like, this, you are so fuck, do you not realize that you're being filmed right now, you stupid freaking teeth white
motherfucker? No, and these people don't realize it. That's it's who they are.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I mean, like, Yeah, I mean, we said it last year with Wagner and campaigning and all, like, after the stuff with the stuff that was going on, you know, after the stuff that was going on, he you know, he called his daughter. He's like, you know, I paid for all her college degrees, and even she couldn't get a job, and blah blah blah. So I mean, like, yeah, I mean, it shows you like who this is, who he is.
That's right.
Surprise!
I can't wait to see when he. I'm waiting for him to do that in the debates, especially at like Elizabeth Warren, and I'm just waiting for that. Like, oh my god.
Yeah. So
there you have it. Joe Biden stepping in again, which is pretty much his MO. So, I mean, everybody's going to get to see that pretty pretty straightforward. So this week, the revelations this week on kind of the like new levels of corruption in the Trump administration have just blown my mind. I didn't even think it was possible, right, for that again. But it's so stark at this point. Like, I tried to actually... When I saw this stuff about Jared Kushner and this real estate company called Cadre, he's a part owner of it, they got like over $90 million in funding that was kind of channeled to them through this kind of Goldman Sachs, you know, device, or what do they call it? That like tool or instrument or something like this, located in the Cayman Islands, which of course provides like the greatest level of corporate secrecy for there, and that's where all the dark money is. That's where all this kind of like tax shelters are. So they're over $90 million went to this company with no explanation. It just kind of blew my mind. Then you take what's happened with Elaine Chao. And Elaine Chao, of course, she is transportation secretary, and she is the wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, right? And she has got, like, her family, who is still in China, basically owns a shipping company who does major business with China, right? She was kind of found out to basically... being making arrangements for her family members to meet with all sorts of Chinese officials when she was traveling to China to go there. These companies that she owns, that she was told to divest from, they're kind of like asphalt companies and things like this. It turns out that she is not divested from them. And every time she comes forward and makes these big announcements around infrastructure, right, or Trump does them, like the stock in that company goes through the roof and she makes tons of cash. Right. Not, so there's that. Then not only that, does she turns out that she actually set up, right, a special kind of envoy to her husband, Mitch Envoy Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, to basically make sure that, you know, they got the contracts that they wanted. So as a secretary of transportation gives her husband, right, from Kentucky, a special person to talk to get contracts for their state as he's leading up to the election in 2020. Nobody else got that. So it's just like the level of it. And what I try to do this week. Oh, and then just today, I hear this morning is that it turns out that Trump, right, bought this house out in California, right, and then just sold it. Didn't even go on the market, but just sold it for almost double the cost. So he made multiple millions of dollars on this. Now, of course, Trump has not divested, right, from any of his businesses, right, including his real estate business. So he personally benefited from this. And it turns out they found out that the buyer was a candidate for Indonesia's presidency, right, who's running to kind of become president of Indonesia. And this house doesn't go on the market. There was no bidding. And so this guy buys it for twice the amount of what it's worth. They even asked, there were some reporters that went and asked people in kind of in the Los Angeles area, say, is this unusual? Is something going on in the market? They're like, nope, I have no way of explaining this. So, I mean, so after hearing that again, I try to take myself, like, just take a couple steps back and say, just think about how freaking crazy this is. Right, because it's like the waves of it make it seem so normal that it's so easy just to joke about it. But this is, I mean, if this is not a case for impeaching this president and everyone that he's freaking doing his bidding, I don't know what is. Because this, I mean, we're talking about the fundamental erosion of kind of like our democracy at this point. I mean, I don't know, Sean. It's just like I see that stuff and I'm just like, man. And then I see like Nancy Pelosi come out and basically still waffling on any kind of questions of impeachment. It just like I can't live in that world sometimes.
I know it's I mean, we are 100% watching the oligarchy at work with this. I mean, it's amazing to see like the lengths that like Pelosi and others will go to defend the institution for the sake of defending the institution.
Yep.
I mean, like, I don't know. The past few weeks have really gotten me thinking of like reading a bunch of like stuff from Hedges years ago.
Yep.
And where he describes like the fall of like liberalism and stuff like that. Like, and we're not watching it as like the fall of like liberal ideas as a whole, but it's more like we're watching the fall of like liberal institutions and failures of institutions.
Yeah.
And this is like, this is exactly what he's talking about.
Yep.
I mean, like, you're watching like it's a failure of this institution to not go after Trump for impeachment. And it's just going to send the message, like, you know, you're talking about it on, it sends the message for a counter investigation from the Republicans to go after those who went after Trump with the Mueller report, or it sets up, like an issue where there's no accountability.
Right. Right.
I mean, yeah, it's just like, and you're allowing these people to obviously break the law and continue to enrich themselves, and you're letting it go on with a blind eye.
Well, you know, I was listening.
It's almost like it's pervasive. You're like, you're just allowing it at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking a lot about kind of this issue, right, around the institutions, to what degree about liberal institutions and so on. And Chris Hayes had this guy, Adam Gopnik, on to talk about liberalism, right? This guy's got a new book out. It's called 1,000 Small Sanities, The Moral Adventures of Liberalism. And they talk about kind of liberal institutions. And I have to say, it's like, if you listen to that podcast, it is the Why Is This Happening podcast from Chris Hayes. It's kind of like came out 3 days ago, Defending Liberalism with Adam Gopnik. There's a lot of I mean, we could have a whole other kind of like side conversation on this like at some point if we wanted to. But I have a lot of problems with the way this guy talks about liberalism and all this other kinds of stuff, especially the way that talks about political liberalism and kind of that bleeds into free market liberalism and so on. But whatever. But there was a one point that Chris Hayes made, you know, when he was talking about, you know, he himself saying he's a liberal and but being sympathetic to a lot of left demands. And he comes up with this one point and he says, you know, there would not be movement. I'm paraphrasing here, but he said there would not be movement forward, especially major movement forward. Like, for example, ending slavery, like the civil rights movement, right? Suffrage, like these major things. That was not something that could happen in an incremental way. As a matter of fact, the incrementalism became a barrier for that major kind of leap forward. And so you needed the radicals. Right. So because this guy, Adam Gopnik, was anti-radical and all this stuff. But you needed the radicals. The radicals were absolutely essential, right, to be able to make to move forward. And without them, it wouldn't move. And then they got into this discussion. It got me, you know, just thinking a lot about it. He says, yeah, but it moved in part because of these liberal institutions. Right. Because of the liberal institutions that allowed these things to move forward. And again, there's a bigger conversation to have here that's kind of reform, revolution, kind of fundamental transformation and so on. But it just got me a lot of thinking about what this means, what this kind of corrosion means in terms of what we're actually going to be able to get done. I'm just going to forget her name. She was interviewed this morning on last night on the Maddow show. Oh, God, I'm forgetting her name. I'm going to forget her name. African-American woman under Obama who's a target. I can't believe I'm spacing her name. But anyway, she was basically arguing that, you know, all these things have to change. And Rachel Maddow asked her a very good question and said, yeah, well, so much of what we've assumed is that I think we've operated in the assumption that, you know, when there's all this corruption that is going on, Susan Rice, I'm sorry, all this corruption that is going on, that the solution to it was exposure. Right, that once it was exposed, then it would be an end would be brought to that. But we're at a point now where the corruption is out in front. The exposure is part of the strategy on the part of the people doing the corruption. Right, so what we thought that these things would happen and that these institutions would kick in to provide the checks, when actually they're not. And they can't, and they won't. And we don't see the will on the part of, say, the Democratic Party to actually exercise impeachment, which seems like the only solution going forward other than a 2020 election, which is, again, a big question mark at this point. And that's really frustrating and frightening, frankly, because so much of what we've kind of learned or expected about what is the normal operating of democracy, even from a radical perspective, right, about how you bring about change, there is a dependence, at this moment in history at least, there is a dependence upon having some functioning infrastructure, political infrastructure, for which to push and which to move through. When that kind of completely breaks down, right, and faith is lost in that, or which they're exposed to be nothing but kind of desires, not laws, and there's no enforceable mechanism, what's next? So, I mean, this is a lot of stuff that's been going through my mind after all this corruption stuff this week. And that, of course, comes on the heels also of Trump openly talking about an ABC interview that, yeah, you know, if there's more, you know, George Stephanopoulos asked him, well, you know what happens? You're supposed to report this stuff to the FBI when foreign actors offer you information. And Trump just says, yeah, that's not the way the world works. And he's like, and Stephanopoulos like, well, what if you were kind of, you know, someone came forward and then said that, you know, a foreign country comes and says, we've got information about your adversary. He said, I think I'd listen. I'd take that information. Right. You know, and I'd see if there's anything wrong with it. Right. He basically openly saying, yeah, I got no problem with this. Right. And what that does for him openly saying that and saying, look, that's not the way the world works. I disagree with the FBI. The FBI is wrong. That sets it up for one hell of a 2020, right? And challenges some basic fundamental stuff about how we function as a democratic culture. So, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things that's just got me. It's at that level, the level of deep concern, right? That is, it's harder to spend time with that, especially amidst all the insanity that's kind of happening on the surface. But I don't know. Like how deep the rot will go, if that makes sense. So, always happy. So, in the meantime, while that's going on, our planet's going to shit. When BP they do this annual energy report, and it basically looks at the kind of increase in it, and yeah, we see that the global emissions, carbon emissions, have increased the fastest rate since 2011. They increased by 2%. And they're saying primarily this is a response already to climate change, because what we've seen, what the report says, is that we've seen more extremes in temperature, right? So extreme heat and extreme cold and these big swings in fluctuation. And basically what that has meant is that the heat stays on longer, air conditioning has to kick in sooner, right? And then you have to back and forth between systems, which uses a tremendous amount of energy. And that's what they're saying is bulk of it. Also on the uptick are the increase in coal-fired plants, right? U.S. emissions, after going down for years, is now back kind of heading back up, right? And all this is at a time, like even BP's chief economist, as I said in the intro, right, basically saying, look, the world is all concerned about this. The investment in renewables is not happening, right? And we can only expect it to increase and go up. Excuse me. So, I'm just going to say this. I started writing this piece on this, and we'll see how long it takes me to get to this one. But there's this increasing frustration that I'm having around, the Green New Deal and the jobs argument, right? I mentioned this a little bit last week. It was my one criticism, Elizabeth Warren, in her town hall, where she didn't answer the question very well, is that one of the things that it's like, again, one of these sacred cows that you're not supposed to touch, right? Especially if you're on the left, right? You don't want to say, well, the right too, but more so the left. You don't want to say that you get this new policy, this new fundamental change policy is going to affect jobs, right? You always want to like let people know, no, they're not going to lose their jobs, right? You know, and then I started thinking about Silicon Valley, right? Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley has been championed in our culture for introducing all these kind of disruptive technologies, right? These technologies that disrupt an industry, right? And they make, of course, tons and tons of profit. And of course, what we've seen in that kind of disruptive kind of mentality has been people have paid the price, right? So Uber, right? It's a disruptive technology that disrupts the industry, kind of like taxi industry and so on, right? Disrupts it, right? Wages crash, right? Yes, you open up opportunities for all sorts of people to kind of get into the gig, right? But the gig is low-paid wages, right, and abusive working conditions that kind of shift everything on the responsibility of the individual, and keeping the company kind of devoid of any responsibility, right? That's the disruptive technologies of Silicon Valley, right? And it's industry by industry, or, you know, industry by industry that Silicon Valley targets. It seems to me that we got to start talking about a disruptive technologies or disruptive practices in different ways when we're talking about climate change, because I don't think we can get away. Look, the Green New Deal, in my view, is a disruptive initiative, and its time has come, and that will disrupt industries, that will destroy coal jobs, gas pipeline jobs. It will destroy refinery jobs for the processing of fossil fuels. It will destroy jobs on oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, right? I don't think there's any way that we can say that we need to get to fundamental transformation of our economy to stave off a catastrophic climate future other than being square in the face and saying, this is what you've got to do. That, yes, there's going to be impacts. Now, here's the difference. Where people shy away from that discourse is because right now, under the kind of free market capitalism that we have, right, the job is equated with our personal livelihood. If we don't have our job, how are our family going to eat? Am I going to lose my house? What's going to happen to my medical insurance? It's because we've run it all through the job. At this point, we've got to separate jobs from people. The job is going down into the coal mines and getting yourself black lung by hammering across on rock or working machines under the ground, right? The job is not the same as the person doing the job. What the Green New Deal does and tries to do, and I think we need to spell out even more, is to foreground the people, not the job. Basically saying these jobs got to go, which means that we are doubling down on people. Right, we've talked a little about this on the show before, that this is what they said. We're going to buy out the contracts of coal jobs. We can do that right across the fossil fuel industry. Right? We can provide a UBI. Right? We can even start a UBI with the kind of with the fossil fuel industry to ensure that those people are not negatively affected. Right? And we need to kind of separate these things out, because if people are going to abusive jobs, right, and that's all they have, and so they're going to fight for an abusive jobs because otherwise they don't know how they're going to make ends meet, then we've got to speak to that, right? So I'm going to be hammering away at this over the next kind of several weeks and months or so, because I look at my kids and I'm thinking, what's got to happen? It's got to happen. Anyways, as I said, Alabama is going down the kind of Gilead route. It's just freaking unconscionable. We're going to see the Supreme Court is hearing a bunch of stuff right now. We're going to have more on that probably next week about how a bunch of cases like the Missouri case and so on are going to be made. The Missouri case might take 2 weeks, but we'll see on. I'm psyched that the baby Trump blimp is going to be brought to the National Mall, hopefully by Code Pink, because Trump, of course, unlike any other president, has decided that he's going to give a speech in the Lincoln Memorial just to give you a giant fuck you to Martin Luther King, I guess. And he's going to sit up there and he's at Lincoln Memorial. And so Code Pink wants to fly the baby Trump blimp on the National Mall, which I think is totally appropriate. If we're going to make it a sham of the whole thing, let's do it. Let's have a big carnival. Right. So there you have it. Last bit of news, which I was so sad to see, that the friendship tree, the French U.S. friendship tree that was planted at the White House by Trump and Macron back when they had their little kind of love fest. Well, that tree has died. So there you have it. Crazy. Anyway, Sean, that's the end of my happy place for the day. Anything else you got on the national level?
No, I think that's good.
I think that's good. Sean was telling me to wrap it up about 10 minutes ago. So Sean does not like to hear me talk. So that's the way we got it. And, you know, that's the way it goes. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that the way you can help support this podcast, you help to support our new writers, that you can help support everything that we're trying to do here at Raging Chicken Press by helping build an infrastructure, a progressive media infrastructure in the state of Pennsylvania and beyond, is that, well, we require your help. You can just go to patreon.com/RCPress, become a member as little as $5 a month. And you know what? That's what keeps us going. We'll be back right after this with our PA Focus.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1924. 300 members of the International Workers of the World, or Wobblies, gathered at their union hall in San Pedro, California. They were holding a benefit for two of their members who had been killed in a railway accident. For the past year, the KKK had targeted the San Pedro IWW members. The Wobblies had led a strike of longshoremen the year before. Famous socialist author Upton Sinclair had visited San Pedro to address the striking members of the marine transport workers. Known for his books such as The Jungle, Sinclair wrote novels depicting the harsh conditions of industrial work. To begin his speech, Sinclair planned to read the Bill of Rights. As he was reading the First Amendment, the one guaranteeing the right to free speech, he was arrested by police. The police and KKK members continued to harass the striking workers. Even after the strike ended, anger against the IWW simmered. That anger boiled over when KKK thugs stormed the benefit meeting, beating IWW members. They tarred and feathered some. They also flung scalding hot coffee at two children, who had to be hospitalized due to their injuries. A photographer who captured images of the injured children wrote a description of the events. Andrew Kruglis, age 9. Is in serious condition, he was the first one out of the hall. As the fiends came rushing in, Andrew ran as fast as he could for a block when overcome by a man in blue who threw a pot of boiling grease on his bare legs. In addition to the injuries caused, the raiders also destroyed the contents of the union's hall. The violence at San Pedro was just one chapter of ongoing harassment against IWW organizing up and down the West Coast. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's our segment 2, PA Focus, and Sean is kind of like all woken up, had some extra coffee, and is ready to go because PA is his backyard, man. He's like, yep. He's the PA guy sitting on that deck watching what's going on in PA. Got the horse blinders on of PA. Sean, what's happening in PA this week?
We could talk about the black bear. Or save that for last.
You want to start with the black bear. I'm looking out there at like the PA progressive movement, all the work that's going on, and people kind of attempting to do this stuff, and you're like, yeah, I think the most interesting thing that happened this week is the black bear.
Whatchamacallit? I guess we can
that's
start.
That's a candy bar.
Yeah. Governor Wolf has vetoed the EITC tax credit giveaway. Which would, you know, increase the EITC tax credit program by $100 million and then increase it by 10% every year after that into perpetuity. Governor Wolf vetoed that. Very sound, fiscally sound decision. Charter school people, not too happy.
Not too happy. Was there much in the Capitol about this week?
Not really. Everyone kind of expected like Wolf to sign it or to veto it. They didn't think he'd come out right away and do it, and he just came out the next day and vetoed it. And pretty much like not giving the Commonwealth Foundation and other people what they want. I mean, you look into these EITC numbers, look deeply into them, and it's like everyone has their hand in the cookie jar here. Like everyone has their hand in an EITC program, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, and I have to say is like, you know, your reporting on this has been so, I think, important and instrumental for this because, you know, I was listening like NPR this week, you know, the kind of morning edition, WHYY, I should say, some of the kind of local reporting on NPR. You know, I listen to it in the morning when I'm getting my kids' lunches ready and things like this. The way that discussion around the EITC tax credit has been framed, it's basically you take the frame around charter schools about choice versus not choice, right? And then you just kind of replay that debate. There was virtually no discussion, and this included some of the talk shows throughout the day. There was virtually no no discussion of the Commonwealth Foundation, about the way that the what's happening behind the scenes in terms of the way that this money gets diverted away from public schools and gets kind of put in the pockets of these folks. There was certainly no discussion of the charter school, the appeal board and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that the whole infrastructure that is kind of built around this question was nowhere to be seen in that discussion. So which is, you know, so important that you've been kind of raising this from the get-go.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, it also shows you that, like, this thing is just, you know, one, it's a bunch of bullshit. And two, like, you can have up to, like, two kids making $95,000 a year, $120,000 a year as a single parent, which I get is, like, not a lot. And, well, it's still a good amount by today's metrics. In some parts of the state, like, making $120,000 a year, $110,000 a year, living with a couple kids on the West Shore, like, you're getting by. It's not like you're struggling, but you're making a decent living here. And it's like those people, like those rich parents, suburban parents, are still able to get into these EITC tax credit programs. So if you're living on this in a school district like in Camp Hill, you're making $100,000 a year. You have two kids, you're a single parent, like you can still get EITC tax credit to send your kids to Catholic school, which by that point is just an absolute choice.
Right.
I mean, we're like, you're choosing to send your kids there. You should pay. End of story. Like, you know, like it's like you're sending their kid there, like, I'm not going to say spite, but like you're sending your kid there at that point. It's a financial decision that you can make and that you can absolutely pay for yourself.
Right.
Right. And absolutely. I mean, yeah, like it's that's the type of stuff that is kind of ridiculous.
Well, especially when you're talking about, you know, you're talking about subsidizing religious organizations. I mean,
we're giving public dollars to religious schools anyway, which is also like, again.
And religious schools, Catholic schools, right? And the Catholic Church after being implicated in child sexual abuse, right? And as an institution, right? We're kind of like forgetting that as a way of kind of funding this too as well. I mean, it's like, it's crazy. Like other contexts, this would never fly. And then here, because, you know, you got the God Squad behind it, it's going to be, to do it. And I don't know. It's more bleeding the school. So a good thing that is dead for now. I'm sure the Commonwealth Foundation is licking its wounds, but they've already got their next plan ready to go.
Yeah. So
crazy. Well, the good news is that, you know, Pennsylvania workers are finally going to be making more money, right? I mean, there's all this report about this is the year for it. Even Republicans are going to raise the minimum wage, right? Pennsylvania is at the lowest minimum wage. Well, last time the minimum wage got raised was because the federal minimum wage got raised and Pennsylvania was forced to make it go up. And so now everyone's behind it. Yes, yes, yes. We've seen the light. We're going to raise the minimum wage.
It seems like from last night that might not be the case. I was told this week they're like 90% sure it's not going to happen.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yep.
And it's like, I mean, you look at it, like we have these budgets and like these negotiations are like made off of false choices.
Right.
Well, if we have to like benefit a program, like increase a program that benefits poor people, then we have to make this false choice and, you know, help out the rich people tenfold. Like, you know, it's almost like an offense to the rich people that like the poors are trying to make an actual like living wage.
Yeah. It's remarkable. And it's remarkable that we feel like we can't like, you know, well, what do the oligarchs think? Right. And we wait for them to respond before. Is it going to be okay with them? I mean, is it going to be okay with them? Cause you know what? Look, we could imagine a scenario where Governor Wolf and the Democrats would basically say, you don't raise the wage, no deal. Right? And we're going to go and we're going to campaign about this everywhere, about how the Republicans want to keep your wages low. Right? And go everywhere and do a whole freaking class war thing on it if they wanted to even. But that is nowhere going to happen. Right? That is nowhere going to happen. And then the fact that there could be – this budget could go into effect without a raise in the minimum wage is unconscionable in my mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that was not just, and this was not just the $725 an hour or $725 an hour, right? This was also having to get increase in the tip minimum wage.
Yes, this is tip minimum wage. This is minimum wage in general. The tip minimum wage is going to be a harder lift anyway, but no, this is going to be a tip minimum. Like, the minimum wage in general is not going to be going up. It seems like the Republicans are bent on keeping it where it's at. They told Patty Kim that they didn't have the time this year. Don't know where they could have found the time. I sure have had plenty of time since the budget started to come up with and talk about this, but it just shows you what's indicative of politics. Like, we have to wait till the second week of June to start talking about this shit in a manner, because the budget's going to get done. And, you know, really, the budget's just a vehicle for a bunch of really bad bills to get through and signed into office.
Right.
So, I mean, like, it's.
Well, hey, you know, I'll tell you, call your representative, right? If you got something to say about this, call your representative. There's been strong pushes from a range of different advocacy organizations and organized labor to get out there and call your representatives and basically say, raise the minimum wage now, right? And especially if you were in a Republican district, right? Then they should be hearing from that. And, you know, what the hell? Throw in and kind of tweet at the governor and tweet at Fetterman and tweet at, like, any of the House leadership, both the Democrat and Republican side, and let them know that that you got to raise the minimum wage, because this is just insane.
Yeah,
it's just insane. So meanwhile, so we talked about this a little bit last week, is that Governor Wolf, he's got this plan, Restore Pennsylvania, right? The infrastructure plan, which kind of basically doubles down on the extraction of fossil fuels in order to build more roads, to have more cars, which will burn more fuel, which will cause more emissions. That plan, that infrastructure plan, has been stymied by Republicans. And so supposedly some PA House Dems are looking to do an end around Daryl Metcalf to basically get it out of Metcalf's committee, because Metcalf,
Daryl Metcalf,
basically doesn't want anything to come out of his committee that is supported by Democrats. So what can you unpack this a little bit, Sean?
Unpack what? Exactly.
Just like what's happening here with this "quote unquote end around." Are they going to be able to do this? Does it look like this is going to be locked in that committee? And how is it that Daryl Metcalf can basically stop this process?
Metcalf can stop this from happening by just bringing it up to a committee vote and then shooting it down in committee.
So why is it in his committee at this point?
I believe it was probably placed there earlier in the committee. It deals with obviously the natural gas drilling and the environment. So I guess that's why I went to this committee. And not transportation or like labor and industry committee, but that's where House Speaker Mike Tarzai put it, and that's where it's gone to die. And I'll believe it when I see if the Democrats can pull off a discharge petition. They tried doing that last year with the gerrymandering bill, and Tarzai decided to bring it up for a vote just to have a big fuck you to everyone. So
what would be required to get a discharge petition? Would it require a majority vote in the House?
I think you'd need like a majority of like House members to sign a piece of paper, mm-hmm. bring it onto the floor, and bring it out of committee that way. I don't know how it works exactly. It's something I've seen it talked about here a few times, but it's never gotten pulled off.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. That's what they're saying they're going to do. We'll see if they're actually gonna try to do it. Because, you know, God knows that we need to extract more fossil fuels so that we can pay for roads to burn more fossil fuels with cars and stuff like that, Sean. It's absolutely yes. important.
More pipelines.
Yep, that's right. that's the way you build your infrastructure. You sell off the future. So have at it.
And fly in the face of climate science, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, science, you know, it's not like Pennsylvania doesn't really have a long history of science, Sean.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's the Ben Franklin thing and the Franklin Institute and, you know, one of the kind of hotbeds of scientific research in the country, especially climate science in Penn State. But that's, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Just deny science. Extract seems to be where we're going. So that's one thing that Democrats, Republicans apparently can agree upon, at least at the leadership level. The other thing that's happening, too, is that you may have seen this. There's been new reports out that Well, actually, starting last year, there were reports that came out that basically they were getting at the national level, they were getting indications once again that there were Russian hackers that and kind of associated hackers who were already probing around into kind of voting systems and voting machines and so on ahead of the 2020 election. They're already looking to kind of find how could they have an influence in terms of the next round of elections. So one of the things that Governor Wolf did, sensibly, I believe, I said, okay, look, we got to make sure that all of our voting machines across the state are going to be one, safe. Two, they're going to have paper backup ballots to make sure that we can trust the results, right? And that's actually, you know, again, frankly, any democracy should do this periodically anyways to make sure that everybody is up to speed, that everyone's got working things, that everyone has equal access to the polls and that kind of stuff. But, of course, the Republicans...
Not in Pennsylvania.
Republicans say, niet, right?
Niet.
We will not have new voting machines. We will not. Right? That's the, that's what the PA Republicans want. They want to make sure that our voting systems are as vulnerable as possible ahead of the 2020 elections.
Pennsylvania is an important swing state. Come on, get the program.
Hey, look. You know, this is the way that these things actually work too, as well, right? All they got to do, you know, it's like we're not kind of like working with any foreign governments or anything like this. All we're doing is we're leaving the door open, right? And we're telling the world we're not home, and that the door is open, right? You didn't ask them to come in. You didn't tell them to come in and steal your stuff, right? You're just letting them know no locks on the doors, and you're not home. Right. So kudos to PA Republicans for further expanding their vulnerability to kind of international espionage and foreign influence. Yeah, there you go. Welcome to the Keystone State. It's called Keystone State for a reason, folks. There you have it. So how's the bear, Sean?
The bear is fine from what I heard.
From what you heard. So did you actually see it when it was walking around or not until it was like it was tranquilized?
I saw it when it was in a tree, climbing around the tree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
like, how close to your house was this?
It was about like 10 blocks away. So I was hanging out on the deck and I saw a post in the Facebook Midtown group come up about a bear in the neighborhood. And I got off the deck.
Stumbled a little bit.
And went into my car and
oh no.
It was driving around. And saw a place where there was a bunch of cops parked and yellow tape, and I said, oh, this must be it. And there's a bunch of people standing out there and there's the bear up there. It was actually pretty cool. It was a yearling, male. Most likely got kicked out by its mother. Because that happens every year with newborns. And you can't have them around, especially juvenile males, because they would just get torn apart during mating season from the other male bears. So the bear was probably kicked out on its own, and it was wandered its way into the city. people saw it in the river. It was Game Commission was probably tracking it for like an hour, trying to find it just from reports and everything, and finally found itself up in a tree. They tranquilized it. The cops or the Game Commissioner actually told everyone what was going to happen, explained that the bear is going to be perfectly fine. It might look worse than it is. The bear's bone structure will allow it to absorb the fall if it hits the ground. And, they also talk about so there's that. And they talked about how it was also like a good learning opportunity afterwards. So after they tranquilized the bear was on the ground, they brought the kids back to go see it, and they allowed media and like everyone else back there to go see this bear.
So they're basically bringing them up into the mountains, basically.
Yeah, they're going to release like an hour or two north of here, and just throw it out in the mountains, and off you go.
Off you go, little one. See you later. Sorry you didn't get a chance to meet the heron guy. You know, that dude that's always down by the river taking pictures of the night herons.
But no, he was pretty cool, and it was fun watching it.
That's cool. How big was he?
About 100 pounds, 150 pounds.
Yeah, pretty good sized bear.
Nice. About a year old.
Black bear?
Yeah. Nice. They were showing us the paws and everything and like the claws and basically explaining how, like, you can have a bear walk up on you from, like, a mile away, and you would never even know it just because of how padded their paws are and everything and how quiet they are.
Yeah, they're remarkably quiet. They're remarkably – for such a big animal, especially even when they're full grown, it's remarkable. They walk through woods, and they're quiet as all hell.
Yeah. So
it's crazy. Well, cool, man. Anything else going on in the state?
No, nothing else much. Nothing.
That's good.
They come back next week. Harrisburg School District is going into receivership. So that hearing is going to be on Monday. That's going to be a fucking shit show.
Are you going to go to it?
Yeah, I might, depending on how my schedule is. So basically, like, the receivership is something almost like welcomed by the local teachers union because of how bad the administration has been and how corrupt.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
And steeped in the political machine it's been for a while. So the people, like, that they've hired a solicitor who's been working with the school that prompted this has a history of just, like, gaming the system for, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time and has never seemed to has never gotten arrested or charged criminally, but there's definitely some, like, impropriety there. Like, it's just this face of impropriety. He was lead. So they put this guy in charge of the school district. Instead of coming up with a rebuttal to the Commonwealth's Department of Ed's thing, he's just going around shouting, they're going to charterize the school district, which is, like, what the receivers can do. But the receivers that are being placed are at the will of the local judge and the teacher. And the teacher Department of Ed. So I do not think that Governor Wolf will be asking for obviously someone to charterize school district. And I do not see the judge involved, who is a Republican judge, do that as well. He's not ideological. He's a good, like, civil servant who's a Republican county judge that has this case. So I do not see him going against the wishes of the government or the governor's office or the local authorities and, you know, going with a different receiver.
Well, there we have it. I'll keep an eye on that. So, do you know if there's any kind of major actions or anything like that happening at the Capitol next week?
I do not know. I also know that their Charter Appeals Board is meeting again next week. So there's that.
That's always good.
Yeah.
But nothing bad can happen there. No, that's for sure.
As we demonstrated over the past couple months.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Well, so close out this Monday. Eric Blanc, who is the author of Red State Revolt, Teachers Strike Wave and Working Class Politics, I'm reading his book right now. He was just in Harrisburg, Monday night? Last night? Last night.
Yes.
He was just in Harrisburg last night, and he's going to be in Bethlehem on Monday to talk about his book and discuss basically working class politics. And there's an event that it's being put on by the DSA of Lehigh Valley. And I think that the DSA Out Your Way is also put on his visit out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he was there in Harrisburg. Were we talking about the DSA? Sorry.
Please. I'm sorry to take you away from Twitter for a second. So
go ahead. Okay. No. He was in Harrisburg last night with the DSA.
Yeah. Blanc. There you go. Okay. Yeah. Sean just repeated what I said. Okay, that's good. Good, Sean. Thank you, Sean, for that clarification. I was like, that was absolutely. Anyways, Eric Blanc will be in Bethlehem on Monday. The event will be held at Color Me Mine, 25 East 3rd Street in Bethlehem. If you go down to the show notes, you kind of click on details there. It'll take you to the Facebook event page. You can check them out or the event page at the DSA Lehigh Valley Facebook page. So that event, sorry, is from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Color Me Mine. So, and then on Monday, I hoped I was going to be able to make that event on Monday and talk to Eric Blanc. We got Anthony Downing, who's up there. He's been involved with helping plan this event. He and I have been back and forth a little bit, and Anthony basically put me in touch with Eric Blanc, and then I was hoping we'll do an interview then, but I'm not going to be able to make it. My daughter's soccer season has started, and my wife works on Monday nights, so I need to be here for my daughter. So I'm going to talk with Eric Blanc on Monday to see when we can arrange a time to have an interview. So that's one thing I'm going to be trying to do this summer is I'm trying to set up kind of a bunch of interviews. If you remember, I did some of these last year. Before I kind of like hit my sleep apnea coma, basically, of being able to think. But I'm back in the, you know, out of the fog and now kind of thinking clearly again. So now I've got kind of agenda all in front of me. So hopefully you're going to hear some more, some connections with the folks out in Harrisburg. What's their name of the bookstore again out in Harrisburg? I'm sorry.
The Midtown Scholar.
Midtown Scholar, yeah. So I had done some kind of work with them back and forth, and so hopefully we're going to have some more of those folks here, but I hope the Eric Blanc will get us rolling good this summer. So anyways, check that out once again, Monday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Color Me Mine at 25 East 3rd Street in Bethlehem, put on by the DSA of the Lehigh Valley. Eric Blanc will be there talking about his book, Red State Revolt, The Teacher's Strike Wave, and Working Class Politics. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this with this week's
Let's Go!
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Back to everybody to this week's Out to Coop podcast. Let's call, if I can get my words straight. It's where we talk about space news and beer, anything else kind of like fun stuff happening around, you know, stuff around the edges, things that couldn't get really put back into the other categories, that kind of stuff. Well, this week, quick takes on space news this week. If you recall that NASA had recently pushed up its plans to go back to the moon, to bring humans back to the moon, that had tentatively been set for 2028. But on the urging, supposedly, on the urging of President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, Pence, of course, who is a total space nut, and is kind of, you know, wants to get closer to God or something like that. Basically, he was out there urging them and kind of having direct talks and pushing NASA to move forward for its moon plans and so on. And that looked like it was going to be a go. And they were looking to open up the rockets and the lunar landers to private companies. We just got news also this week that private visitors are going to be able to now visit the space station, which I didn't talk about this in the opening, for the mere price of $50 million, right? They're going ahead and privatize that.
Right up front.
There you go. But so anyway, so it came as a bit of surprise basically to anyone who had been paying attention to this, right? So initially it was like, whoa, we're actually going to do a moonshot once again. By 2024, we're going to have people back on the moon. And people were getting excited about this in the space community and so on, especially private industry was getting very excited about this. And then out of the blue, right, Trump comes out and says, he tweets, quote, "For all the money we are spending, NASA should not be talking about going to the moon. We did that 50 years ago. They should be focused on the much bigger things we are doing, including Mars, of which the moon is a part, defense, and science." And there was a lot of kind of like throughout the week, like, you know, said Trump said Mars is part of the moon. Right. And like, look, I mean, I get the cheap shot. You want to take it, the guy, things like this. I mean, I think what he was saying there was actually, okay, the moon is part of going to Mars because there's a plan, the NASA has a plan of building a base from which to send stuff out there to make fuel and that other kind of stuff. But again, you take the jab, you take where you get the jab. But it's hard to understand, right? Like, if you want to go to Mars and you're telling that the moon is part of that project, why would you then be throwing shade at NASA for going to the moon? It's just freaking nuts. And so put the space community in a bit of a tailspin. And finally, kind of Jim Bridenstine, who's the NASA administrator, who's appointed by Trump, basically comes out and says, no, we're all fine. We're still moving ahead and going with this. So that was the kind of big deal for this week. But it got me thinking about some things. Politico just published a piece this week about the space race once again, and asking the question, is China already ahead? If you recall, China has really been all about establishing a base on the moon, and has been ramping up those things, ramping up its plans pretty straightforwardly. It was very interesting. If you know, as I've said before, Kim Stanley Robinson's book, Red Moon, obviously it's a science fiction book, but basically lays this plan out, right? And as it's kind of happening, is because the one advantage that China has is being this kind of like autocratic regime. Right, is it when it decides to do something, it devotes all of its resources single-mindedly toward it. Right, and infrastructure is one of these areas in which China has really excelled in terms of like the scope of big projects. It's doing a ton of stuff in Africa. Of course, there's all sorts of things with the major dams that they have built, which of course have been devastating and all this kind of stuff. I'm not trying to say all this stuff is a good thing, but I'm saying this is kind of within their wheelhouse of actually going ahead and establishing this stuff. So we'll see. And so then I got to thinking, it's just weird that Trump would switch so quickly here. I started thinking about this China trade war. I tried to think about like kind of what was going on with there. And there was reports this week that Trump had met with Xi, the president of China, Xi, before the March 1st trade war deadline. He was planning on kind of meeting with him. There have been some back channel discussions and so on. And it just got me to thinking with this Elaine Chao stuff and with everything. I wonder if there's not some grift that's going on here. Right. So in other words, China announces plans that it's going to go and establish something on the moon. Right. NASA, urged by Pence, to say he wants to kind of like ramp up their schedule and get there first and get out there and kind of establish the thing all there. China's announced these plans, and now kind of Trump wants to kind of pull back. It just got me wondering. It's got me wondering what kind of kickbacks and scams are going on there. Right. Because for all the talk about kind of like, you know, China being an adversary and all this other kinds of stuff, if you look at the way that Xi rules in China, you look at the way that Trump rules, the way Putin rules, and all these other autocratic rulers, they're all in the same autocratic club. Right. They're all operating in the same way. They all understand each other and how to move forward. So I'm just going to be just watching this for a little bit. So it's just kind of interesting to see what happens there. So. Another thing, one of the kind of Martian imaging satellites that's out there was going over this dune this past week, and it snapped this picture of this basically this formation that's kind of embedded in one of these dunes, and it looks just like the Starfleet logo. Yep. And that made me really happy, so because Starfleet has already been to Mars, and so that's really good. So we know that our future is bright, and our socialist future is closer than we ever thought, so that's good. Because we all know that, you know, before they can make contact, we have to see this and have to warp. Anyways, so there we go. Anyways, in other science fiction news this week, Sean got his car inspected. I didn't even know this was even going to be in the realm of possibility, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so technically.
Technically, see? Your qualification right off the bat.
The inspection is not done, but there's a sticker on my windshield that says 06 of 2020. So,
are we a nation of laws?
Basically, we need to get done. I need to get a couple welds made to my exhaust system underneath, and it's to the point where like they don't weld where at Firestone. So their solution is to spend $2,000 and get the whole entire front, the whole entire underside exhaust redone, or to go to a place and get the welds done. So I might get the welds done, I might not, but I'm at a point where like the car is 17 years old, Mm-hmm. And it's like, how much longer do I want to just run this thing into the ground?
All right. So anybody sees Sean this week, right? And you talk about this stuff. Remember, our climate is going to hell. And Sean's car did not pass the emissions thing because it needs some welds. And Sean is deciding whether or not he should actually get that fixed so that fewer emissions head out into our atmosphere. Right? I mean, not that Sean's car is going to break our back or anything. It's more about kind of our relationship to climate, right? So you just might want to have a little talk with Sean if you see him this week.
Our car is not going to, like, be the Rubicon.
Yeah, you know what? And if everyone follows your lead, guess what happens? It's There's a slippery slope, Sean. It's a slippery slope, man. You do it. What's to prevent someone else from doing it? You're a thought leader now, man, right? You're an influencer, right? So you've got to have your kind of like influence. You know, you got to have it. You got to get that squared away. You don't get a pass on this just because, you know, just hang out on the deck and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Now Sean's mad.
Yep.
Oh, man.
But
get it taken care of. I'm telling you.
It's good enough to get me around from place to place over the next year.
Yeah, you notice that? You notice the response? This is how it works, right? You say this one thing, and you seem like he's responding to what you're saying, but he's not really. He's actually diverting attention in a different direction. That's how it works. I study rhetoric for like that. That's what I do.
Divergent. It's a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic move. Exactly. You have been in Harrisburg too long, I think.
But anyways, we'll see.
I am happy that you got it inspected at least. So,
well, yeah, there's a sticker on there, which is all that counts.
Whatever, man. Whatever. By that logic, is like if you could just pay somebody to get the sticker without getting inspected, as opposed to the inspection actually being part of actually, you know, keeping the car safe so you don't die or kill somebody else for that matter. You know, that's good.
Well, if it kills anyone else, it'll just be the smog that's coming out of the back, coming out of the tailpipe.
Exactly. No, it's going to be what it's going to happen because you don't get those welds taken care of. So a piece of your like tailpipe is going to fall off when you're doing high speeds, and it's going to bounce behind you and go through the windshield of someone. And I can tell you what's going to happen to that person. Right. But you know what? You saved a couple bucks. So that's all that matters, right?
I don't think that's going to happen. Like,
you just jinxed it, man.
The one thing that has to get done is like a bracket because like one of the nuts is like rusting, and they said it's like almost to the point where it's like rusted to failure. So it's like I don't want the whole entire. So this is something that will be getting done soon. Like how fast?
You notice the passive. We will be getting done soon. Who will be responsible for getting that thing done? I don't know. It will be happening. In the future, the car will have been inspected.
Holding off to once the budget's over with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, that'll do it. Because, there'll be nothing after that. But, no, good. No, that's good. So that's a big deal. You don't understand how big of a deal this is, everybody. So congratulate Sean, but tell him to get his emissions things taken care of. That's all.
Always.
Yeah, so this weekend is Father's Day, and Free Will, as far as I can tell, is not having new releases this week, so that's the reason why I'm kind of looking elsewhere. But I did see this. Four packs. You can pick up four packs of dad jokes from Saucony Creek, and that is in Kutztown. I don't know. I haven't talked about Saucony Creek in a while, in part because, frankly, I just haven't been drinking as much beer and haven't been paying as much attention to this stuff as normal, and Free Will is right in my backyard and always kind of like see what's going on there. But Saucony Creek out in Kutztown, they put on a huge outdoor patio, which is awesome. And because it used to be the place where the brewery is, used to be an old car dealership, right? And they've got the restaurant in the front part, or the kind of the gastro pub in the front part, and all the brewery and stuff like that is out back, and where they used to kind of do all the repairs and everything. And then off to the side, they got this big parking lot, which has mostly just been a parking lot, and you know, there's like weeds growing in different parts and things like this. But they took a big chunk of that and made it this really nice outdoor space. And I've been using the outdoor space a lot more lately, and been having shows and everything like this. And so I was just kind of poking around there and saw the stuff with dad jokes, and I'll give you a little description of what it is. It says, dad jokes makes you think that you're getting another one of today's juicy, sweet IPAs, but engages your palate with a clean, refreshing, bone-dry finish, because this is a Brut-style IPA. Late editions of Amarillo and Motueka lend juicy tropical flavors with a balanced hop bitterness, right? So that's how they're pitching it. And I don't know if you – have you had any of the Brut IPAs, Sean?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it is a slight difference, right? You actually hear what they're talking about with that Brut, right? That Brut means dry, and you do get that really kind of dry finish to it. So I haven't had this one yet, but, you know, look, anybody wants to drop me off, you know, it's Father's Day and stuff like that. It'd be really nice. No, that'd be great. But so, yeah, so that's there. And they also have announced, once again, their annual 4th of July pig roast. And that is going to happen on the 4th of July. So if you don't feel like barbecuing, you don't feel like cooking yourself, you got, you know, you don't have a real place to go, this is a great place to go. $25 will get you awesome slow roasted pork and a whole bunch of sides for everything from mac and cheese, coleslaw, corn on the cob, watermelons, all a bunch of stuff like that. There'll be live music from 4 to 7 p.m. from Nick Cerniglia, who I've actually heard really good things about. Hopefully it'll be a great day to spend out on the porch and things like this, or out on their patio, rather. So sit there. So check them out. They deserve a shout out every once in a while, especially if you haven't been there for their food lately. Their food is just freaking absolutely stellar. So do check that out too as well. What else you got going on this week, Sean?
Nothing else is going on. I'm staying up here. Parents are going to be away for this weekend, so I'm staying in Harrisburg. Not a whole lot.
Looking for stuff to do.
Exactly. I mean, I kind of enjoy this, like, sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah.
But definitely we'll be going out, enjoying the weather this weekend. It seems like there's going to be a nice little break still. And go out walking around and enjoy, have a nice hike.
Cool, man. That sounds good. Sounds like a good plan. I sprained my foot last week. So I think I'm kind of on the positive side of the healing now. So I got to get back out in the garden here. I've got some more stuff I got to plant. So that's what I hope to do this weekend. We'll see. I might be putting up a shed too as well. I got to wreck a shed last week. Right. At my mother-in-law's house, we got to wreck the shed that my father-in-law built like almost 40 years ago. Right. That thing is solidly built. Right.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it was at its time. So we took that down, got one of those Bagster things and kind of loaded it all up. And now I got to put up the new shed. Probably do some of that at least this weekend if we can't get the whole thing. So we'll see.
Good.
I like to build stuff and dig in dirt. That's that's my happy place, really.
Yeah.
So cool. All right, man. Well, hey, have an awesome weekend. Let's hope the weather holds out for a cool week. And for my daughter today, she's on a field trip to Elmwood Park Zoo, which is really cool. And the weather seems to be cooperating, which is great. Yeah, so that's that. Anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, I am good.
All right.
Have a fun time. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, we'll do. Well, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for tuning in. I want to remind you, become a member, patreon.com/RCPress. Become a member today. Talk to you soon, everybody.
See ya!
But now we must take the next step forward and guarantee every man, woman, and child in our country basic economic rights, the right to quality health care. The right to as much education as one needs to succeed in our society. The right to a good job that pays a living wage. The right to affordable housing. The right to a secure retirement. And the right to live in a clean environment. We must recognize that in the 21st century, in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, economic rights are human rights. And that is what I mean by democratic socialism.